ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Rishabha, the crest jewel, Pada, by a foot, Ahataha, struck, Mukham, countenance, Prapashyan, while gazing on, Tanum, the body, Utsasarja, he cast off. Indeed. Brahma continued, so the continued is Brahma came and he saw the body of Hiranyaksha and he marveled. Oh, who could meet such blessed death? Brahma continued, he, Hiranyaksha, was struck by a forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis, seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies, meditate upon in seclusion in mystic trance. While gazing on his countenance, the crest jewel of Diti's son has cast off his mortal coil. So that's the particular speciality of how Hiranyaksha died and how it's so wonderful. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of yoga is very clearly described in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is here said that the ultimate end of the yogis and mystics who perform meditation is to get rid of this material body. Therefore, they meditate in secluded places to attain yogic trance. Yoga has to be performed in a secluded place, not in public or in a demonstration on stage as is nowadays practiced by many so-called yogis. Real yoga aims at ridding one of the material body. Yoga practice is not intended to keep the body fit and young. Such advertisements of so-called yoga are not approved by any standard method. Particularly mentioned in this verse is the word yam, Y-A-M, or unto whom. First word in the verse. Indicating that meditation should be targeted on the personality of Godhead. Even if one concentrates his mind on the bore form of the Lord, that is also yoga. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, one concentrates his mind constantly in meditation upon the personality of Godhead in one of his many varieties of forms, is the first class yogi. And he can very easily attain trance simply by meditating upon the form of the Lord. If one is able to continue such meditation on the Lord's form at the time of his death, he is liberated from this mortal body and is transferred to the kingdom of God. This opportunity was given to the demon by the Lord, and therefore Brahma and other demigods were astonished. In other words, the perfection of yoga practice can be attained by a demon also, if he is simply kicked by the Lord. I mentioned yesterday, this evening, that there was this survey done amongst Christians to find out if they felt that one can attain life hereafter, whatever that that means to them, if you're not a Christian. 70% of the Christians said yes. And then some Christian organization looked at that and said they must not have understood the question. So they rephrased the question. They got 65% of the Christians interviewed saying yes. And then the third thing that was said was, I think they wanted to do it again, and they asked some more, like, unusual type questions, like, even if one is an atheist, going to attain life hereafter? And the answer was, some of them, some 35% said yes. And then the rationale of the analysts said, because the thought is that God is kind. So here's kind, merciful, compassionate. So he is confirmed by Lord Brahma. I'm going to read the next verse because it has no purport and it ends the section. Next is the demigods speak. So these two personal, text 29 translation, these two personal assistants of the Supreme Lord, having been cursed, have been destined to take birth in demoniac families. After a few such births, they will return to their own positions. No purport. And it doesn't indicate otherwise, so it sounds like Brahma is speaking this, since the previous verse is Brahma is speaking. So the points emphasized in the purport is this message that the goal of yoga, this yoga samadhina, is to give up the body. Of course, everybody gives up the body, even persons that don't want to give up the body. But this meaning of giving up the body is and not taking another one, or goal of yoga is liberation. That liberation is only possible when there's detachment from the body. That's only possible when there's attachment to something that's transcendental, beyond the body. And so, therefore, this word, yam, it's a pronoun, unto whom, unto whom. So, it's a person. Yam yogino, yoga samadhi narahota, that way of keeping the mind fixed upon the Supreme, is when the mind is actually fixed, we'll say positively and negatively, when the mind is actually fixed, it can't be moved. And that's when there's something so completely satisfying and absorbing that even something comes along to distract it, it cannot. The negative is, by mechanical process, that is not samadhi. It's a discipline to help one become proficient at fixing the mind so that that can then be applied toward the transcendental objective, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. Yam yogino yoga samadhi naraho. Prabhupada liked to give examples of Vishvamitra Muni or Chobari Muni or someone who may have been very proficient in the mechanical process, but without fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord, the mind can be distracted by mundane attraction. So I can take a guess, I don't know for sure, when people take yoga classes, if they're told that's what the purpose is. But most likely they're not given that understanding, most likely because the teachers themselves don't have that understanding. So it'd be nice if they could read Srimad Bhagavatam and get that understanding, or we can help them by explaining it in a nice way, so they can understand what the goal is. And Prabhupada doesn't fail to point out also what it's not. It's not just slim and trim, or looking very youthful. And in one sense, it's not the fault. It's not the fault of persons that take up yoga for that reason, because most people aren't teaching what the real reason is. So they only have the default understanding. But for devotees, it's good if we can help people understand the real reason. And it's doable. There are, for preaching purposes, there are devotees that are doing that type of thing, teaching yoga and then gradually bringing people into the realm of bhakti. Although from what I can understand, the commitment to bhakti from the practice of yoga, it's not a high percentage. And a lot depends upon the quality of the devotee that's presenting. But it's otherwise it's cheating. If persons aren't told, it may take some time to tell them in a way that they can accept it. But that's the goal. Fix the mind upon the personality of Godhead, and upon leaving the body, not return to another material body. That's also being said here, that one, just by meditating on Lord Bor, one can achieve the perfection. This fixing the mind, giving up the body while the mind is fixed upon the form of the Lord. Prabhupada writes, if one is able to do that, up to the point of death, he is liberated from the mortal body and is transferred to the kingdom of God. So the two places in Brihat Bhagavatamrita that help understand this a little bit. One of them is Gopakumar's visit to Tapaloka. And in Tapaloka, the Tapasvis, it's Brahmacharis only, by the way. Grahastas go to Maharloka, where they do yajna, and the celibate, lifelong celibates who actually are satisfied in that position may go to Tapaloka, and they're meditation fans, and they meditate upon the form of the Lord. When Gopakumar goes there, he finds very, very elevated personalities, some that we find in the Bhagavatam. He has a conversation with Pipalayana Rishi, who's speaking in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. These are sons of Rishabhdev who become greatly elevated souls, perfected souls. So they're in Tapaloka, they're not in Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha Loka. At least when Gopakumar passed through there. And they give an argument in favor of meditation, where they're saying something that sounds good but is not completely right. Their argument is that when there's seeing of the Lord, you want to see the Lord. So Gopakumar, seeing takes place first in the mind, before even the eyes can acknowledge what it is that one is seeing. There has to be an acknowledgement on the mind. So seeing takes place first in the mind. Seeing is in the mind. So just see in the mind. Why are you running around looking for Madan Gopal for? Just sit down with us and meditate. We see him all the time. All the time. Except when we stop to talk, to have conversation on deep philosophical matters. We can see the Lord all the time. Come on. Engage in meditation. It's superior. Later on, Gopakumar, he tries to get into it, but he wants to see Madan Gopal. It's not the same. So when he goes to he's spoken to by Uddhava, if I can remember correctly. There's some conversation where there's a long antidote, like medicine, for what he heard. He said, you heard about this preference to meditation, to devotion, but then the superior position of devotion is described, and it's a long section. And it's a very important section because at least those striving for perfection, they like meditation. It's like peaceful. You don't have the issues of social interaction, because when there's social interaction, there's potential problem. So I just want shanti, so I just meditate. Anyway, some people like that. When we go to our japa retreats, often they're that kind of a place. It's a Buddhist place or a meditation center. And there's no Krishna, it's just silence. In fact, a no talking allowed place, silent. Real and personal. So, the arguments given by Uddhava include, one, that there's not purification. This neutral state may be achieved, but all it takes is some disturbance over here, and the neutral state may be moved. because it's not our natural state. And moreover, the senses are not engaged, and so the senses want engagement without the senses being engaged. In the positive, they'll hanker for the negative over the course of time. It's a fall-down position. And besides, the happiness of service is vastly superior to the happiness of neutrality. And therefore, everyone wanting happiness, the platform of devotional service is far superior. Plus, there's fixing of the mind in the process of service. Fixing of the mind upon that same form of the Lord in service. So there, the message that Gopakumar is hearing is, what you heard sounded good, but it's not complete. Then there's another, in the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is a discussion of Narada when he meets with Prahlad Maharaj. When he meets with Prahlad Maharaj, he's glorifying Prahlad Maharaj, and Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, so many self-deprecating things, and then says, but, you know, I'm just neutral. My process is remembrance of the Lord. But far more absorbed in the mercy of the Lord is Hanuman, because Hanuman is always serving the Lord. He's also always thinking of the Lord, always remembering the Lord, but he's always serving the Lord. And in that serving the Lord, he's always in his personal presence. And he's forever spirited by this mood of service. That would be, you know, you should visit him as the recipient of the mercy of the Lord. So the teaching of Lord Chaitanya begins from this platform of service. The neutrality stage that is found in meditation, and the liberation that comes from meditation in the neutrality stage, is not the same for the devotee. The devotee is doing active service in the spiritual realm on behalf of the Lord. And Shanta is neutrality, just existing in a non-active state. So another point is, for the verse is saying that the personality, these two personalities, this fellow that's lying down here, or his body, very soon, just a couple more births, and he'll return to the spiritual world, because Brahma is understanding, although he was fearful, and the demigods and Lord Brahma wanted to see him destroyed, removed. He's but an associate of the Lord. He's one of the two, Jaya Vijaya personalities. And soon he'll return. So the main theme is how one has one's mind fixed upon the form of the Lord at the time of death, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, shajadante kalevaram, he'll attain that position. So, as the survey very recently passed, someone forwarded, just came and made some news report within the past week, they were right, without even knowing it. And even a demon, speak of an atheist, an antagonistic demon. Hearing a lecture, Prabhupada was speaking just this morning, and Prabhupada was saying that Kamsa was a first-class Krishna conscious person. He was always thinking of Krishna. wasn't bhakta, but he's a first-class Krishna conscious person. Just this thought of Krishna gave him the same benefit. He got not only relieved of his sinful reactions, but he achieved liberation, this abhas bhakti, out of fear. So, hela namabhas, and forget all the adjectives. Different types of abhas bhakti. It's very powerful. I was reminded by Pratushnava Prabhu that this today is the disappearance day. Jiva Goswami and Jagadish Pandit. Now I don't know anything about Jagadish Pandit. Does anybody here know anything about Jagadish Pandit? Jagadish Pandit? Maybe we can look that up, because I don't know anything about Jagadish Pandit. Certainly know about Jiva Goswami. We can say some words of appreciation of Jiva Goswami. There were three brothers, Rupa, Sanatana, and Anupam. And after Jiva Goswami was born, Rupa Goswami and Anupam were moving about to meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by providential arrangement, Anupam left his body, leaving Jiva Goswami without his father. So, it's not a very clear report, but it seems that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to the place where Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were residing, in the service of Nawab Hussein Shah, Jiva Goswami was also there, just a small boy, very, very small, and he had Lord Chaitanya's association. But being so like an infant, he didn't remember any of that. And he never otherwise had Lord Chaitanya's association, but he grew up hearing all about Lord Chaitanya. And when he was still a young man, wishing to go to where his two uncles were, he passed through Navadvip, where he met Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda took him on parikram throughout all of Navadvip. And that's recorded in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, his association with Lord Nityananda. And with Lord Nityananda's blessings, he went to Vrindavan, but he was under Lord Nityananda's instruction. He got training before he went to Vrindavan in the six darshans. Means the renderings of the Vedic texts that are atheistic. He got trained up before. He got thoroughly trained under Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. He got thoroughly trained in the Sanskrit renderings of the atheistic teachings, principal atheistic teachings, in Prayag under a very qualified teacher. So that he knew that side, and then when he went to Vrindavan and studied under Rupa Goswami, he certainly very clearly understood the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So he was well equipped to become a writer of transcendental knowledge. And in the format of his writings, particularly in the Sandarbhas, included, he would make some statement, make some logical presentation, make a concluding statement, give the scriptural support, and then give the Purva Paksha, the arguments the people would give. To this, some people would say, blah, blah, blah. And response to this, this is my answer, and the scriptural support. And then to this answer, they will say, some will say, blah, blah, blah. It's classic format. You anticipate the argument against the assertion that you make. You say what the argument against the assertion you make, and you feed the argument. It's part of the exercise of logic. So he was very skilled in logic, and he knew what the other arguments would be. And he knew what the defeat of those arguments was. It's very thorough and very, very elevated. He wrote 400,000 verses in Sanskrit. 400,000 verses. Like, you know, the Bhagavatam is 18,000. So how many Bhagavatams is that? 18 into 400. That's how erudite Jiva Goswami was. Very, very prolific, and it wasn't lightweight. It was heavyweight Jiva Goswami. And of course he trained after Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, who was the next acharya in our line of disciplic succession. And he then trained those who became the next in the line of disciplic succession. He gathered the literatures of the Goswamis and established them in a library, fortunately for us, so that we have the writings of the Goswamis. In addition to his own writings, he maintained a library and a whole staff of people that would make copies, because there were no printing presses, so that they could be available. It wouldn't be lost in time. In the area by the samadhi of Sanatana Goswami, some of you have been to Vrindavan, so the Madan Mohan Temple, and then down over the hill of the Madan Mohan Temple, partway down the hill, is the samadhi of Sanatana Goswami. And in that courtyard, there's a number of samadhis of others. Way over in the corner, almost in the very, very corner, is a Granta samadhi. It's some texts of Rupa Goswami that were so elevated that Jiva Goswami took it upon himself, recognizing that people wouldn't understand them in the future or misunderstand them in the future. He buried them, placed them in samadhi. He established the Radha Damodar temple. The Radha Damodar deity is a beautiful deity form that was personally given to him by Rupa Goswami, according to the biographies. Rupa Goswami with his own hand carved the deity of Radha Damodar and gave the deity of Radha Damodar to Jiva Goswami to worship. The temple of Radha Damodar is the place, because of its physical location, or geographic location in Vrindavan, it was the place where the Goswamis would come centrally and discuss Krishna Katha. It's a very nice setting. When I first went in 1974 or something like that, we were shown the place where they would have their katha, and it was, you go, now it's no longer not the same, they've, whatever you call it, renovated, or they changed it. Used to be that you would go in the front gate, go around to your left and circumambulate around the samadhis, and then come back around behind the deity. And then there was this area that kind of went down, and then there's a building up above, so you were shaded. It was cool even in the hot summer, so they could sit in that cool, because Vrindavan gets roasting hot. So they were in a cool place, and nice space. and would sit to discuss topics about Krishna for hours. Too bad they didn't have tape recorders at that time. We could have listened to the discussions of the Goswamis at Radhadamodar Temple. And because the standard of worship at Radhadamodar Temple was so high, and Rupa Goswami endured, he was the nephew of Rupa and Sanatana, so when deities were not, you know, where to continue the worship of deities so they could remain safe, like the Govardhan Shila that had Krishna's footprint in, that Krishna provided for Sanatana Goswami to circumambulate around. A number of deities were placed there. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's deities and Bhugarbha Goswami's deities, Jiva Goswami's deities, Sanatana Goswami's. So it was a center, even amongst the Goswamis. It was a very powerful center of Krishna consciousness. And from that, the spreading of Krishna consciousness. So Jiva Goswami was super acharya, super scholar. Prabhupada made some remark on more than one occasion about, in the history of the world, there's never been one as brilliant as Jiva Goswami. That's quite a statement. And when you read his writings, the appreciation grows very easily, very quickly. Wonderful, very profound, in some ways simple, but also very profound presentations of the Siddhanta of Lord Chaitanya's teachings as found in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Jiva Goswami Ki. You have something then? Okay. Wow. Oh, really? There's a lot here. From Gaura Gaudadesh Deepika, this is going to tell who he was in Krishna's Leela. The wives of the sacrificing Brahmins and Vraja took birth as Jagadish and Hiranya. Oh, okay, Jagadish and Hiranya. Okay. The Lord, Mahaprabhu, asked for and ate their prasad on the Ekadasi day. So that's the pastime. Next, it also says, in Vraja, there was a dancer named Chandra Hasa, who is very expert in the tasting of rasa in Chaitanya Lila. He became Jagadish Pandit, who also took great pleasure in dancing for the Lord. Jagadish Pandit is simultaneously considered to be both a Nityananda Sakha and a Chaitanya Sakha, that is, a branch of both Chaitanya as well as Nityananda in the desire to create devotion. He took birth in the town of Gauhati. Prabjyotishpur in modern Assam. That's the same place where the Brahmin who left Vrindavan, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Brahmin who left Vrindavan, he went there to meditate on the goddess Devi, Prajyotishapur, in Assam. Anyway, his father's name was Kamalaksha Bhatta. Both of his parents were devotees of Vishnu. When they died, he came with his wife, Dukhini, and his brother, Hiranya, to Mayapur, on the shores of the Ganga, where they built a home near to that of Jagannath Mishra, Jagadish Pandit subsequently became Jagannath Mishra's very close friend. Jagadish and his wife, Dukhini, had the same kind of parental affection for little Limai as Jagadish and Jagannath as Sachi. Dukhini was like a mother to him, to the Lord, and sometimes acted as his wet nurse. Limai, the son of Sachi, is none other than the son of Yashoda, the Supreme Lord Krishna incarnate. It is not possible for anyone but an eternal associate of the Lord to have the good fortune to treat him like a son in this way. So there's a leela where, I'm not going to read it, I'll just describe it. One day, on an Ekadasi day, little Nimai was begging to have the offering that was made by Jagadish and Hiranya. And he kept insisting and insisting and insisting. And finally Mother Sachi took him to Jagadish and Hiranya's home. Jagannath Mishra was surprised to hear that Nimai saying such things. How could he know that Jagadish Pandit was making a rice offering on Ekadasi? Jagannath Mishra immediately went to the neighbor's house and was surprised to see that a large offering of rice and other dishes had indeed been made to their Vishnu deity, because Krishna doesn't fast, we fast from beans and grains. Jagannath told Jagadish of Nimai's request, adding that he was worried that it would not be correct for him to eat rice on Ekadasi day, but Ganga's eternal associate Jagadish Pandit knew that it was Gopal in the form of Nimai who was hungry. Without any hesitation, he gave the entire offering to Jagannath Mishra. As soon as Nimai received the plate, he immediately stopped crying, because he was crying and crying, then began to eat. From Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, Jagadish Pandit and Aranya are Chaitanya's branches of the desire tree of devotion. The merciful Lord gave them his grace when he was a little boy. He ate the offerings of Vishnu at their house on the Ekadasi day. Jagadish Pandit purifies the entire universe for the nectarian love for Krishna which pours from him like torrents of rain. It's also described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. The Lord grabs the things of the devotee even if he doesn't offer them, but he shows no interest whatsoever in the gifts of the non-devotee. Just as Mahaprabhu was conquered by the devotion of Jagadish Pandit, so too was his dearest companion Nityananda Prabhu, who considered him to be one of his own intimate associates. Nityananda Prabhu was Jagadish's life and soul. Jagadish was present in Panihati for the Chira Dahi Mahotsav. Here's a whole other lila. Wow, that's a lot. Before taking sannyas, Mahaprabhu ordered Jagadish to go to Nilachala to preach Krishna Bhakti and the religious practice of the age, Nam Sankirtan. The son of Nanda, Sri Krishna, and the son of Jagannath Mishra, Sri Gaurasundar, are the same supreme divinity as Jagannath. When Jagadish arrived in Puri, he went for Lord Jagannath's darshan and melted with love when he saw him. On his way back to Bengal, however, he felt extreme separation from Jagannath. Thousands and thousands of people go in pilgrimage to Puri every single day. All of them take darshan of Jagannath, but how many of them are overcome by feelings of separation when returning home? Perhaps once in a while some fortunate individual will be able to feel such emotions. If one truly feels such pangs of separation, that is a sign of Jagannath's mercy. If not, then one has not truly received the grace of the Lord. Jagannath Dev, the deity, saw Jagadish crying. The mercy appeared to him in a dream and told him, to take his vigraha and serve it, simultaneously appear to the king of Orissa and ordered him that at the time of the Nava Kave Vara, when the wooden deity of Jagannath is renewed, the outgoing form should be given to Jagadish Pandit. As a result of this dream, the Maharaj considered it to be a great honor to give Jagadish Lord Jagannath's outgoing form, which is known as the Samadhi Stha Vigraha. Jagadish prayed to Jagannath, asking him how he could possibly carry the deity's heavy body all the way back to Bengal. Jagannath answered that for his sake he would become as light as cork. Then Jagadish was to cover him with a piece of new cloth and carry him suspended on the end of a staff. Whoa. Wonder where this comes from. Jagannath further informed that he would have to make a permanent arrangement to stay wherever he was set down on the ground. Jagadish enlisted the aid of two Brahmins, and they took turns carrying Jagannath as far as the village of Jashora on the banks of the Ganges near the town of Chakdaha. Jagadish left Jagannath with one of the Brahmins and went to take his bath in the Ganges and to perform oblations of Ganges water. While he was gone, the Brahmin found that Jagannath was suddenly becoming very heavy and he was no longer able to hold him up. When Jagadish came back from his bath, he saw Jagannath sitting on the ground and realized that the Lord wanted to stay at that very place. Chakhada, or Chakdaha, is a historical site in an ancient holy place. Okay. People started to come and see Lord Jagannath at Chakdaha. Being attracted by Jagadish Pandit and his wife's parental devotion, Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu both visited the Jagannath temple in Jashora on two different occasions. The two Prabhus held Sankirtan and a feast both times. And the Lord, as the Lord was about to leave Jashora to go to Puri, Dukini began to cry from the imminent separation so intensely that the Lord agreed to remain behind in the form of Gorgopal deity. In the course of the couple's household life, they also had a son named Rambhadra. So I think there's something further, but Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Does seem like there's a contradiction. This is what I have understood from the mood of Jai and Vijay was the former. That is, who could fight with the Lord except us? His devotee. Who has the capacity to do so? So if the Lord so desires, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's rendering. And so they took that service. But it's not that only a devotee of the Lord can fight. Others who are not devotees of the Lord can also fight. But the second quote that you read, it's not that every time, you know, Jai and Vijay have to just keep falling down and, you know, coming to the material world and do that program. Not that every time that's who it is, nor that every time the only persons who can is a devotee. Rather, Jai and Vijay were of that mood in service. That was their disposition. That's my understanding. Go ahead.
Well, I don't understand how the Lord Krishna has information to fight with the demon.
Why not?
And there is this. Because we hear that, for example, the Lord doesn't consort with the material energy. We don't touch material energy.
So, but it's Lord Vishnu is doing this through his potencies. Not a problem. Lord Vishnu is in the material world. He's in the heart of every living being. He's not in touch with the material energy, but he's within the heart of every living being. So he does through his potencies. Not a difficulty.
When he kills demons in Vrindavan,
it's Lord Vishnu.
It's
Lord Vishnu. That aspect of Krishna is the aspect of Lord Vishnu does the killing. I don't know. I can't. But specifically, repeatedly, it's said when Krishna does the act of killing, and when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, it's an aspect of Krishna. But Krishna's business is the spiritual, you know, the transcendental lila that he performs in Braja, other than that of killing of the demons. Because in Goloka there's no demons. So. Krishna can do things through agencies and not come in contact with material energy. Not difficult. Or contradiction. Pritranaya satana vinashaya shatuskrita. He comes to admonish that. So it's not that everyone who becomes a demon has to be a devotee that became a demon. You know, to serve the Lord. That's not. So. This is a very special thing, Jai Vijay. You're probably not satisfied, but that's the best I can do. Anyone else? Yes?
When did the Jai Bhagavad Gita become a vas for us? Because we're hearing how so many different types of vasa, bhakti vas, personally achieve such an elevated state. And here we are struggling and trying to use the services and knowledge of Prabhupada and Nanaparaya. When does it become a vas, and then how does a vas become?
Well, real simple. Trying to overcome is a vas, and having fully overcome is shuddha. Not even trying to overcome for us. It's offensive. Continuing to sin on the strength of chanting. Somebody may say, oh, if that's the case, I better stop chanting because I know I'm doing some bad things. That's not the right understanding. The right understanding is it becomes namabhas by trying. Otherwise, how are you going to go beyond the tendency for sin unless you take shelter of Krishna? Oh, but I shouldn't take shelter of Krishna while I still have this tendency, because then I'll make an offense. So, that's this very simple explanation. We've been introduced to chanting, And we've also been introduced to what the offenses are, and we should strive to overcome the offenses. And if we don't strive to overcome the offenses, we continue this or continue that. It's offensive. Give up the defensive mentality and at least come to the clearing stage. And by so doing, we can come to the shuddha stage, defenseless stage. Anything else? Okay. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.